as women, we all know what it's like to be on a hormonal roller coaster. I certainly know personally what it's like, the cravings, the ups and downs, all the things that come along with it. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier by creating supplements with science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Adaptogens can help the body adapt to any stressor, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And this isn't just for women going through menopause. Women with any symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopausal symptoms that can put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes, night sweats, low moods, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Lastly, it's not just a supplement. It's a phenomenon. It has a huge rave on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code LIVINGFULLY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code LIVINGFULLY for 15% off today. Hey y'all, this is Mallory Irvin and it's time for all of us to live fully. It's so important in this crazy world of ours that we stay connected, inspired, and motivated to be and do our best. And that's not always easy. I'm here with my guests and friends to share the stories and lessons we've learned to help you live your best life every day and truly begin living fully. Let's make it happen and get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Living Fully podcast. I am super thrilled to bring Thea Walker on today. She is the founder of an Instagram account and business called Teaching Tinies. And I'm going to do an intro to Thea because she is very qualified to talk everything we're going to be discussing today. But also, I'm super excited because Thea is my first cousin and basically like a sister to me. So we grew up on the same farm together, and Thea and I have grown alongside each other for forever and ever, and I'm so proud of what she's doing today and the work that she's doing to empower parents to confidently respond to their children. It is truly amazing. So I'm going to intro Thea really quickly before we get started. So Thea is a work-at-home mom of a toddler named Jude. He and Shepherd are only a few weeks apart. She's a board-certified behavior analyst specializing in early childhood behavior and sleep. She educates parents on the most recent evidence-based strategies rooted in science to empower them to confidently respond to their children. She has a bachelor's in child studies and educational studies from Vanderbilt University and a master's in behavior analysis from St. Louis University. Before teaching Tinies, she conducted research on child behavior and worked with families in their homes conducting assessments, providing direct behavior therapy, and training parents on how to respond to their child's specific behavior. It is so powerful what Thea is doing in a sea of information that's out there on how we respond to our children, how we raise our children, and how we do the best by them. So I'm so excited to bring my cousin Thea and a real professional in this space onto the podcast today. Okay, I'm really excited to be doing this podcast today because the only person that I've ever had like from my life from like basically birth on is my dad and Thea's uncle. So Thea is not only a professional in her space and someone that's going to bring a lot of amazing information to us moms and just people trying to live a better life, but she's also my first cousin and basically like my sister. So, hi.
Hi. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Thea started this really amazing Instagram account called Teaching Tinies. How many months ago was that, Thea? It's like not even a year ago. It's been like months.
It's been close to a year, but I mean, I really seriously started actually taking the time to do it, being in quarantine with a 5-month-old baby and still being someone who really likes to get after it and have something that I'm doing and being productive every day. I really started to get after it in April.
Mm-hmm. And since then, it's already got like 10,000 followers. She's got a really engaged group, which I think it took me like a year and a half to grow to 10,000. And it's really hard to grow these days. So it just goes to show that, you know, in the space where a lot of people are doing sleep and toddler and behavior and all of this stuff, there's something that you're doing that's different. People are catching on and really loving it. So I'm really excited to bring this to my audience today. Super pumped about that. But starting out, I just want you to intro yourself. I know everything about Thea's entire life, so I could do this whole podcast for Thea, but I'm going to let her speak for herself and introduce yourself. Tell us just about your background, kind of how you grew up in the family that you did. Thea was raised on the same farm that I was. So, and then kind of what led you here today to what you're sharing on Teaching Tinies?
Okay. So I am a mom, first and foremost, wife to my wonderful husband, Austin, and a board certified behavior analyst. And that describes me really in a nutshell of what I do every day. But how I got here was a long and interesting journey. So it started, I am the oldest of seven children, six younger brothers. And the youngest sibling was diagnosed with autism whenever I was 13 years old. And we as a family chose to really change how we interacted every single day to make sure that the way that we interacted with Matthias, my brother that was diagnosed with autism, was therapeutic. And the way that we chose to do that was by pursuing applied behavior analysis or ABA therapy, which is at the foundation of what I do. And people think therapy and think that something that's so cold, something that has to be like so rigid and scientific, but you can have a personal twist and a personal application of something scientific. Mm-hmm. So we then chose to use those strategies in how we interacted with him. And it turned into really how we interacted with how and my parents interacted with all of their children on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so I went into college, Vanderbilt University, wanting to be a behavior analyst. And so chose to study child studies and educational studies. That's something that I knew that I wanted to do. I knew that I had a very unique experience by growing up doing essentially ABA, but I also had that personal touch of knowing that it doesn't just take a therapist to do it. It takes a lifestyle change in a family to do it. I worked one-on-one with families for a while, and I loved providing services one-on-one and helping families individually, but I realized that Instagram is a platform that allows me to reach and touch and help everyone. Uh-huh. And so that's what brought me here.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of everyone, you know, she's talking about autism or disabilities, you know, that's kind of part of her journey. But what she discusses on Teaching Tinies is exactly what Thea just said in the last sentence of what she just said. It's how do we exist as a family? It's how do we improve the behavior or help improve the behavior of our kids? How do we help them to sleep better so that we function better as a family? How do we deal with sibling rivalry and things, you know, all of these things that you talk about that are very specific and scientific, but are things that we as moms and we as people, we deal with every single day. And what I love about Thea in particular, there are a lot of accounts sharing a lot and a lot of really big accounts sharing a lot of information. And Thea always says, you were saying it on your Instagram today, you should always question people's credentials, what studies they're talking about, because there's so much information out there right now in the world of social media, which is amazing, but it's also confusing. And sometimes it's incorrect. And I like it that everything that you talk about is science-backed, but it also still has that human aspect because you came from this family where you applied therapies and techniques. And we basically had like an in-home clinic. Because I mean, also, you guys know, if you listen to the podcast, we grew up in the middle of nowhere. It's not like there was a facility like there is in Nashville or St. Louis or, you know, wherever you are. So I love the personal experience and the humanization that comes with something as serious as being on the spectrum or something like sleep and potty training.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it came down to when you understand the basis of human behavior and the strategies that we were applying with Matthias because he had autism, we quickly learned that it had nothing to do with autism, the things that we were applying. We were breaking things down in a way that was more easy to learn, which doesn't take an individual with autism to benefit from that.
Exactly.
It benefits all toddlers and all humans. And we looked at How do we encourage behaviors that we want to see decrease? How do we respond to a behavior that we maybe want to see decrease? And again, it had nothing to do with autism. It was, we were simply learning a better way to interact with siblings that were younger. Keep in mind, I was 14 at this time. So I was interacting with my younger siblings more like a parent, but we were learning how to interact with toddlers in a way that they could benefit from 100% of the time, not just an individual with autism.
How do you as a parent responsibly weed through all this information and find what's right for you and your child and your family before you just throw your hands up and say, whatever, I'm just going to keep treading water because there's too much information?
So we, right now, we all have information to all the questions that we would ever have, mm-hmm. literally at our fingertips. Yeah. And we have someone saying one thing, and a quote unquote expert saying another. Mm-hmm. And it's a blessing and a curse because you don't know what to believe.
You don't.
No. And unfortunately right now, fear mongering and shame and guilt sell. Big, bold headlines, catchy graphics on Instagram, the all or nothing statements gain attention and traction, even when research doesn't exist to support those claims.
And it's like something so important as raising our children and affecting their behavior for the rest of their lives, potentially.
Well, it's really hard to separate information that's based in science versus something that's simply a passionate opinion. So, and people tend to run with these passionate opinions and things that are hardcore, one camp or another. And science and parenting don't work like that. It's not that black and white. Yeah. So we have to then weed through all the information and choose to apply what we're finding to what our unique family needs and how our unique family, how they operate and things that are in line with our values. Mm-hmm. When you see a catchy headline or an all or nothing or something bold or extreme, like sleep training ruins attachment or rewards are bad or timeout hurts your child, that should be a red flag. Yeah. Because research findings are more nuanced than that. They discuss limitations and simply just the claims aren't going to be that flashy. I mean, a big example of that is there was an article that was printed discussing how timeouts and the title of that article was How Timeouts Hurt Your Child. Again, a really catchy headline that grabs your attention. And again, I'm not advocating for saying that you should use timeout, but this article again was talking about how timeout hurts your child. And the research that this article was based on was actually conducted with college students, get this, playing video games where their character was excluded from an activity.
That is
and
wild.
They took data on how a college student reacted and felt in that moment. And now I'm sure we can agree that that is much different than a child that is in a loving relationship with a parent. Yes. So this is just an example where that catchy headline and fear mongering took off and stuck. And this is now an article that is cited all over social media where people are discussing, oh, you can never do timeout because it hurts your child. Mm-hmm. When in fact, that's not true. It's not true at all.
It's just,
well, later, those same researchers had to put out a statement and they actually said that when timeout is done correctly, that it is an appropriate parenting strategy.
Well, that sharing that, were they?
No one talks about that. No one talks about that the efficacy of timeout done correctly exists. And now on social media and in parenting groups, rather than teaching a parent how to do timeout effectively and giving them the option to use that as a parenting tool, they're simply saying, no, don't do it. It hurts your child. In putting them in a place of making a decision out of fear rather than education and empowerment. Mm.
Isn't that the truth with everything? Making decisions out of fear versus education and empowerment. I feel like that's something that we struggle with in so many other ways too. Can you first start by defining sleep training in general? Because I think people have a misconception of this. They think we're leaving our kids in a crib screaming, crying, not feeding them when they need to, not touching them. And it is so opposite of that. I want to start with that.
So yes, you are 100% right. Sleep training triggers such an emotional response in people. You are either fight because you're so passionate about it and want everyone should sleep train because it changed your life. You are either fight because you are so anti-sleep training, or you just don't want to talk about it at all because you're like, oh no, I could never do that. But it's because people have such a misconception of sleep training. You're right that their sleep training isn't putting your child in a crib and letting them cry for 12 hours and then getting them out of the crib the next morning. Sleep training starts the second your child wakes up in the morning.
Okay, pause. Everybody's listening to this. Sleep training starts the second your child wakes up in the morning.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, before we're even worried about bedtime and putting your child in the crib, we need to make sure that we're setting your child up for success to be able to fall asleep when given the opportunity to at bedtime. So during the day, you're looking at, is your child taking in the right amount of calories? Are they sleeping enough during the day so they're not overtired when they go to bed? Are you following age-appropriate wake windows? Are their nap lengths acceptable? Are you setting up routines that show them that sleep time is coming during naps? Is the environment conducive to good quality sleep? And before those things are in place, your child will not be able to independently fall asleep at bedtime. So setting your child up for success for bedtime starts the second they wake up in the morning.
It's very gentle. It's like strict, but it's gentle. It is a kind approach. It's helping your child. It's holding their hand just like you would when they're crossing the street. It's holding their hand through something that's very important and vital to their development, which is sleep.
And I mean, you're literally giving them a skill that they will use for the rest
forever.
Of their lives. And I don't like you saying that sleep training is getting your child to sleep through the night, because no one sleeps through the night. We all wake and arouse and wake slightly between sleep cycles. We toss and turn in the middle of the night, but there's times where we don't even remember that we're doing it because we're able to then go to the next sleep cycle and have consecutive sleep cycles and have good quality sleep. And that's what we're teaching our child to do. We're not teaching them not to wake up. We're teaching them that when it does happen, they have confidence in themselves and that independence to be able to then fall asleep and have good quality, deep restorative sleep throughout the entire night.
Exactly. I watch when you post like testimonials and I see people commenting on pictures and stuff about how either people were leery of or misunderstood sleep training and then like did your course and they're like, I cried. Like, it changed my life. It changed my family's life. And I just think it's so powerful, which is why I know it's a hot button topic, but you approach it in a perfect way. And I've just seen it work in my own life and all of our cousins' lives beautifully.
Well, and you mentioned attachment when we first started talking about this. And in my ebook and when I work with families, I talk about two things. I talk about a love tank and I talk about a sleep tank. Both are vital to have a happy and healthy baby. And to make sure that your child is able and can confidently go to sleep on their own at night, first, their love tank has to be full. They have to know that they are securely attached to an adult and are confident in when they really need you, you respond. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that every time your child whimpers, that you have to jump and rush in to meet every need. That's not how it works. But during the day, your child needs to know that you're there and that you're present and that their love tank is full.
Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? Because you always say like attachment is not necessarily proximity. It's other things too. So can you give some examples?
Sure. So attachment parenting and secure attachment aren't the same. Attachment parenting is a list of steps that people must do to have an attachment with your child that actually isn't based in secure attachment research.
And what are some of those examples?
So secure attachment, it has more to do with your child being confident in your consistency, your reliability. When something is wrong, you are present and you are an individual in their life that is predictable and reliable. that has nothing to do with physical proximity or connectedness.
Because attachment parenting, sometimes people are like, they're holding their child on their hip all the time. And they think that's forming the secure attachment, giving them everything that they could ever want, whether it's a cookie or a, you know, just to be happy because I want you to love me.
Exactly.
Which doesn't work in real life either.
You know? And what makes a child feel securely attached and loved is consistency and predictability and reliability. And that's what they need from their parent. They need a parent who is consistent, predictable, and reliable. And that is the basis of forming that secure attachment, not physical proximity and touch. I mean, even though physical touch obviously does play a huge role in connectedness, but it's not just limited to that.
So like if you're a new mom and you feel totally just like strung out of your mind and you're like, I can't go to a 3-hour hair appointment because I can't leave my child because then they're going to think I've abandoned them. And people think proximity is so much about that. I even fall into that sometimes. I don't want any extra set of hands sometimes, even though I really need them. And I'm like, wait a second, that is just not the case. It's not helping me as a mom and it's not helping my child. Like I like it how you say that because it's a balance between the two.
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously with a newborn, that physical proximity is going to be very important and that physical touch with a newborn, but a newborn versus a toddler is very different. I mean, I chose to use a ring sling and baby wear and do chest naps with my son Jude the majority of the time because it made us both happy. But if that's not something that works for you, that's okay. And that's not going to ruin your attachment with your child. I chose to do that because that's what we made us happy together. And it worked for him. It worked for me. If it didn't work for him, I obviously wasn't going to force him to do those things. But it worked. And that in no way was going to interfere with our attachment if it didn't work for me. You were talking about how a parent and a mom who is typically the one that's staying home with a child, wearing a child, needs to really pay attention to their mental health.
Yeah.
If you are doing something out of fear, but it isn't working for you, you need to stop. At the end of the day, your child doesn't need a mom that wears them all day long, that is worried about only feeding them organic food or what behavioral strategy I'm going to do next. At the end of the day, your child needs a happy and healthy parent.
Amen. Yeah. At the end of the day. And so many people forget that. So many people forget that in their quest to do what is right, I believe. But so many people forget, especially as moms, to check in with their own feelings and forget like what's working and what's not and the state that they're in. Because Thea and I were talking about this too off the podcast, but kids can feel, what were you saying? Like kids learn their behaviors from their parents. So maybe you're not talking about your anxiety and your stress and stuff, but you're acting it out with your body and the way that you exist in the world. So they take that on.
When you're a parent and you are experiencing anxiety, depression, stress, things like that, those aren't necessarily the things that your child is going to model or pick up on. But what they are going to notice are what we call collateral responses. What are the behaviors that you're exhibiting that aren't normal you, that are resulting from those feelings of anxiety and of stress? And one, those aren't going to bring out your best parenting strategies. Yeah. You aren't going to be able to be a reliable and predictable, I know I keep using those words, parent, if you have these underlying feelings. Mm-hmm. Your behaviors are going to be exhibited differently. And that's going to be really important to recognize. Another thing you want to model for your child is taking care of your own mental health. Yeah. You don't want to model for your child that when something's wrong, we ignore it or we don't take care of ourselves. Mental health is really important. And people tend to try to hide things from children, but they learn to process those big emotions and to not be afraid of them based on seeing other people work through them. And we talk about a lot like what we want our children to be and what we want our children to do. And we teach our children through modeling and being good models for them. And so we have to be very purposeful in what we really want to teach our children. So I imagine for most people, at the end of the day, it's not that their child learns their ABCs is their ultimate goal. Instead, I'm sure most people want their children to be kind and productive members of society and give back to the world. And this all starts with identifying what our parenting values really are. Yeah. And again, our children become what we model for them. Yeah. So if we want a child who can say no and have healthy boundaries, then
we have to learn to be.
You have to set yes. and consistently follow healthy boundaries. Yeah. If you want a child who's empathetic, you have to show them empathy and show others empathy. And if you want a child who's respectful, you have to teach them with respect. If you want a child who takes care of their own mental health and takes it seriously, you have to do the same.
Very powerful. That's a very powerful statement. And for some reason, it's not something that we think about as much as the dang Dock-a-Tots and the organic baby food, because we think that that's going to be the thing that moves the needle.
Absolutely.
To make our child one way or the other. And that's really powerful. And I love the way that you said that. So I want to go into something that I love that you share on social media, and that's empowering your child by the ways that you correct something that you're doing or that you redirect their behavior. You have this segment that's called This or That. So some of those things, when you post them on stories, I'm like, oh, shoot, I've been saying that. And so Thea will like give an example of something that we as moms say. Okay, so let's do a This or That. So what's something that's very commonly said by a mom that you can rephrase and help your child's behavior and development?
Sure. So quickly, the reason that, like these kind of strategies that you're talking about, a lot of times you'll see on parenting sites on how to respond when your child engages in an unwanted behavior. And a lot of what I focus on isn't how to respond when an unwanted behavior happens, even though I do touch on that, but how to prevent the unwanted behavior from occurring in the first place. The goal in parenting shouldn't be to constantly put out fires. The goal exactly. should be to create an environment where the fires don't happen in the first place. Or, I mean, they will happen on occasion because that's developmentally appropriate with a toddler. But when they do happen, you have the tools based in science to respond in a consistent way that teaches your child a new way to respond when they're feeling a certain way.
But I like that you reiterated that, because I think a lot of people forget that that's what you want. In at the end of the day, you want the behaviors to happen less and less. You don't want to become a master at kung fu fighting all the time,
Absolutely.
Like trying to block the bad behavior.
Absolutely.
Yes. I love that and reiterating that. So say, because this is a part of, because we all have unwanted behaviors and things that we need to redirect. Mm-hmm. So talk about like a This or That that you see that's really common.
Sure. So a strategy that I use and teach parents to use, I call it the illusion of control. It's like a magic trick. So toddlers are at an age where they are craving independence. Mm-hmm. They need to feel that they are in control of situations. Mm-hmm. And that's developmentally appropriate for them to start practicing and seeking out this independence. And often as parents, we tend to tell our children what to do constantly. Time to take a bath, turn off the TV, sit in your chair. And when a toddler is trying to be in control of situations and they're constantly being bombarded with demands, that creates a power struggle and a fight. And so rather than constantly telling your child what to do, you're going to give them the illusion that they are in control.
Yeah.
The outcome is still going to be the same. So for example, go sit in your chair. And say it's dinner time, go sit in your chair. The outcome is going to be sit in your chair, but you're going to tell your child, do you want to hop or fly to your chair? And they then are able to make a choice and be independent. And even though, again, your outcome is still going to be the same, you're still getting what you want, mama, but you are giving your child the illusion that they are in control and they are able to make a choice for themselves. Mm. And that at the end of the day, when you're able to, instead of placing demands and constantly telling your child what to do, this is going to go a long way in reducing those power struggles and giving your toddler that independence that they are so desperately craving. Mm,
that can be applied to anything. Like say, instead of getting the bath, do you want bubbles or no bubbles? Probably. Or like, put your shirt on. like what, or do you want the blue shirt or the red shirt today?
Absolutely.
I think of so many different things that I say that I could rephrase and give him that, what he's craving.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, choices can be offered in who does something. Do you want mom or dad to help you with your shoes? How something's done? Do you want to run or skip to the bathtub when it's done? Do you want to take a bath after you brush your teeth or before you brush your teeth? I mean, or what is done? So do you want to put on your shirt first or your pants first? So there are so many ways we can be offering choices to our children if we just take the time to think about it in a different way.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to give you a few that I have to say in my house a few times. What if it's like, don't push your brother, which I'm saying all the time, don't push brother. Oh, don't hit brother. Be gentle with brother. Okay, so how do you rephrase something like that? Because obviously you don't want the child to get hurt, but then again, you don't want resentment to form. And I hate having to be like, and actually Ford is not super bad about that. Actually, it's the other way around. But I'm always looking for ways to reframe that.
So that's a little different because you're not trying to get your child to do something. Rather, you're trying to reduce an unwanted behavior. And in those situations, I like to use what I call positive opposites. So instead of telling your child, don't hit brother, which is really hard for a child because they have to take the don't statement, so the negative, and then reverse it in their head. So first they're hearing hit brother, and then they have to then process the don't piece of it.
That's interesting.
So that is not only more difficult for them to process, but a lot of times children then don't stop engaging in an unwanted behavior because they don't know what to do instead.
Yeah.
So rather tell him like, okay, we need to have gentle hands with brother and show him what that means. And then offer attention and praise when your child is engaging in that behavior that you want to see used instead.
Mm. That's a great one. Okay. That one's a good one. So I'm trying to think of another unwanted behavior. So say we're in church all the time on Sundays and they're just loud sometimes. They want to talk loud or they want to, especially if you're at a restaurant, say they're kind of yelling and like doing things like that where they're just being kids, but mm-hmm. it's a situation where things need to be quieter. How would you redirect things in that way and do the positive opposites?
So what I like to do in that situation is, because be quiet. Children don't understand what that means. The word quiet is so abstract. So instead, what I like to do is teach children and give them, make it metaphorical. So you can say a lion voice or an elephant voice, and we have a mouse voice. So, and practice those things at home. Like, okay, let's talk like a lion and talk loud, or let's talk like a mouse and talk quiet.
Great tip.
So whenever you are in the moment, if when you're at church or when you are in a restaurant, like, okay, we're going to use our mouse voice and make it a game, mm-hmm. but, and then reinforce like, oh, you're being the best mouse. I love your mouse voice. And make it a game.
That's
and
awesome.
Make it positive. So again, your child isn't constantly being bombarded with correction and no's, that you are constantly keeping that positive momentum going in the right direction to support behavior that you want to see increase.
Yeah. That's incredibly amazing advice. Your journey with breastfeeding really is a powerful thing that you've shared, and you still have trouble sharing it sometimes because it's something that you just really struggled with. But I know a lot of mothers listening to this podcast have also struggled, and it's really powerful to hear you talk about it. So can you talk a little bit about your journey with that and then what you learned from it?
My journey with accepting myself or being confident in myself as a parent started before I even became a mom. I struggled with unexplained infertility. Austin and I tried to conceive for a year before Jude was born. And my journey with unexplained infertility and not being able to breastfeed challenged me and took more of a toll on my mental health, my relationship with Austin, my relationship with God than anything I've ever experienced in my life. And as you talked about, I grew up with a mom who had seven children, mm-hmm. who breastfed seven children, and who was a lactation consultant. Mm-hmm. So that was what I had in my head as the image of what a mom is. And it didn't work like that for me. Even becoming a mom in the first place didn't work like that for me. So, and this gets into too, just the dangers of comparing yourself to another mom. So this was the example of a mother that I had that I was comparing myself to. So when things didn't come easy for me at the time, I knew I wasn't in my head at the time. I wasn't going to be the mother that I thought that I needed to be. But I'll get back to my breastfeeding story. But it's funny, I'm different than the mom that I thought that I needed to be, that I had this image of in my head. But I am now more of the mom that I ever imagined myself being. And I know that I am everything that Jude needs. Yes. And I don't doubt that at all. But it's different than what I thought it needed to be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and now I'm kind of getting back to how we were brought up and how we're headstrong and man, how
Thea and I, like, literally, you know, this, it's just a really funny way that we grew up. And it's so funny, like, me as a parent, I've changed things too, as have you. And our parents did an amazing job with all of the tools that they had in the world that we were brought up in. But you know what's really funny? For me to, like, stress and, like, having an extra set of hands or being out of the house sometimes or working and, like, not being around my kids 24/7, our dads, my and Thea's dads, were not home like 5 days a week. We saw them on the weekends. Like, they were building their business. And do you even remember? Like, I don't.
It's funny that, no, I don't. All of my memories do include my dad being there. So I think it had more to do with how great of parenting our mothers did. Yeah. And how attached we were and how confident and comfortable we were in our homes.
Yeah.
And it just really shows what a great job they did. And when our dads were around, how present they were. When Austin and I initially were trying to conceive, I was asking the doctors to do every test. I was praying to God to move mountains. And I knew that I had to work even harder than I was asking the doctors and God to work to make this happen. And I approached breastfeeding the same way. I mean, you're right. I went to every lactation consultant and they always told me, you just need to nurse more. You just need to pump more. You just need more stimulation. So I was like, all right, by golly, I'm going to pump more and nurse more than any mom that's ever existed. So yes, I pumped every other hour and I nursed Jude using a supplemental nursing system that I put formula in. And it was essentially a necklace you wore around your neck. You filled with formula, a feeding tube went that you taped to your breast and you nursed. And I also did that every other hour. So the longest time I ever had where I wasn't doing something was 30 minutes. And even though, I mean, I was miserable. I literally
1 week old babe. This was the first couple weeks that Jude was alive.
I did this for 3 weeks. Wow. I carried around a clipboard in my house with a data sheet. I'm a behavior analyst, so I can't let it go. Carried a clipboard, keep track of everything. And I mean, I was pumping hours upon hours a day, and I was miserable. I was manic due to the lack of sleep, but even though I wasn't seeing any effects doing these things, I couldn't quit because in my head, tomorrow would be the day that it works. And if I quit today, I'll never get there. And that was just that find a way to win mindset. Yeah. That was just, I know I can make this work. I'm not working hard enough. So I woke up the next day and I did even more. And it was literally driving me crazy. And so finally, I was at another appointment with a lactation consultant. She looked at me and said, you are doing everything you can. I'm not charging you for this appointment. And so she recommended that I go get my hormones checked. And I went. My body wasn't producing prolactin, which is what's necessary to produce breast milk.
So you would never. No matter how many days.
Tomorrow would never be that day for me. But even then, I still couldn't accept it. I still spent probably another week doing this because I was like, no, I can make it work. Even though science was telling me I couldn't, in my head, I couldn't let that mindset go. And then once it took Austin sitting me down and saying, Thea, you are driving yourself crazy and you have missed almost now a month of this beautiful little boy that is happy and healthy and thriving that is right in front of you. And I mean, of course I responded to that in anger, like, no, I'm doing this for him. I'm doing this for him. But I wasn't. I was doing this because of this made up image in my head of what I needed to be as a mom. And it was driving me crazy. And then, yeah, it was a punch to a gut learning that no matter how hard I worked, it wasn't going to pay off. And I just had never experienced that before. I was angry. I was devastated. I hated anyone that could breastfeed. I mean, Shepherd and Jude are 10 days apart. And I mean, I'd unfollow you on Instagram because
you just can't look at it.
Such a trigger. Yeah. I was so angry. And I also was angry because this was something that I didn't know people experienced.
Yeah.
Because people don't talk about it. And I think that people don't talk about it because it comes from a place of embarrassment. Yeah. And I was embarrassed. What we think is the most basic function of a mother, being able to feed your child, when that doesn't happen, it just shatters any confidence you had about being able to provide for your child in any way. And it doesn't need to be like that.
Same with conception too. I feel like so many people are like you, and they want to just dig to the bottom and get every test and be like, tell me what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's wrong with me. And that's why it's like, what's the better thing? For there to be something wrong with you and to be able to correct it, or your tests are all clear, but you're still not able to conceive? It's like, it drives people mad. And you know, what's really interesting, and I know that this is, there's not really much science behind it, but you, as a last stitch effort, you had a recommendation to do a vegan diet, right? And then that's the month that you got pregnant with Jude, which is interesting.
Yes, very interesting. So my doctor, as a last ditch effort before we started pursuing IUIs and IVF and the more intensive fertility route, she said that there's some preliminary research that suggests that a plant-based diet increases fertility. Wow. I am a steak and potatoes gal, and the thought of a vegan diet sounded terrible. But again, this find a way to win mindset was like, oh, I got
do it.
I'm going to be the best vegan that there ever was. So I did. I dove headfirst that day into a vegan diet. And lo and behold, a month later, that next cycle, I was pregnant. Again, I don't know how much of that is coincidental, but that was the one thing.
That's very interesting, though.
It's very interesting.
You know, and this is why I just love you, because even though you had success at this, instead of now taking the vegan will get you pregnant flag and flying it all over your Instagram and doing a graphic that says go vegan and get pregnant, that's really flashy, which you could do because that was your experience. You look at the science and you say, you know what? It was preliminary. I tried it. It worked for me. But here's what I believe about it. And like, that's what's really powerful about you in this space, because, and you know what I feel is I think everyone cares about children and helping children, but in particular, you really, really, really care about helping children. That's why you are one-on-one with children with disabilities and in their home, because that is what you're passionate about. It's not about making money. It's not about being popular on Instagram. It is truly about changing families' lives and kids' lives. And
it shows. Absolutely. I mean, I see what I'm doing as I am creating a next generation and a generation that is better. And that is it's such a privilege to be able to do that. And being able to guide parents every day to be able to be more confident in the way that they're parenting, to make sure that this next generation is better, is such a powerful thing.
It's a really powerful thing. And it's something that you're recreating this. You're breaking the cycle that a lot of families have, where it's this vicious cycle of, oh my gosh, I need a break from my kids so that I can restore. And then like you're back into these behavior cycles and in these different things, but you're like breaking these behaviors in a way, or lessening these behaviors, so that things just start, like the family starts functioning as a team again, and people are happier, and kids are happier and healthier. And it's like, you're changing the cycles in our home, but that also changes the future. Because you and I have talked this whole podcast about how much our individual upbringing affected the way that we parent. You're also affecting how they're going to parent their children, you know.
100%.
Yeah. So this is just, it's really, really powerful, the work that you're doing. And I'm so excited that I got to bring it to my following today on the podcast. I want to also link, Thea's got an ebook on sleep training right now that's out, and I'm going to link that. And then she's also got several other ebooks that are in the works that she's been talking about, and a lot of other projects. And you just need to follow along on Teaching Tinies on Instagram too, to see all of that. But I want to close with, you know, the podcast is called Living Fully. It's all about living your life full and feeling like you're living like the best version of yourself as a mother and a family member and all of these things, a business person. So how do you describe living fully in terms of parenting?
Oh, so if I could tell a parent one thing, parents constantly approach me all day, every day about what should I do when X, Y, or Z occurs and all these conditions that they're putting on their child. If I could tell a parent one thing, I would say, stop right now. For a moment, look at the child that is in front of you at this second. For just a moment, set aside the worries, the what if's about their future, the questioning what you're feeding them or how you're parenting. Appreciate them as they are in this moment without any conditions. Failing to do just that is getting in the way of our ability to just be moms and to just love and enjoy our children as they are in this moment.
That is beautifully said.
So it's
a beautiful thing too.
And I mean, that's my ultimate goal in everything that I do when I work with a family. I'm not asking you to change your parenting philosophy or your values. I don't ever want to make a family have to make a decision because they feel shamed or afraid or that you have to do something in this way. My goal is to share strategies backed by evidence-based science that empower parents to make a change where they need it in their family.
Yeah, that is beautifully said. I don't think there's anything that I could say at the end of this podcast to sum that up any better than you just did. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, Thea. I think this is going to bless a lot of people that are mothers right now, that are looking to become mothers, that work with children, or just people like that exist in everyday life. I feel like a lot of this stuff can apply to us as adults, but this was really powerful.
And thank you. I love being here and sharing information with you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to reach even more families and to make sure that this next generation is even better and to empower parents to be the best and happiest moms and dads that they can be.
Well, I feel empowered. I just want to bust through the brick wall and go down there. I'm going to wake Shepherd up from his nap and be like, Shepherd, you matter. Look you in the eyes and make sure that you're, that's, yeah.
Please don't wake him up from his nap.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I won't. But thanks so much, you guys, for listening to this episode of Living Fully. I'll leave everything Thea Walker and Teaching Tinies in the show notes, including her ebook on sleep training and some other ones that she's hopefully going to be coming out with soon. So thank you so much to Thea, and thank you to all of you for listening. Tune in next Monday for more.
Thanks for joining us on Living Fully with Mallory Irvin. And remember to subscribe so you don't miss a single minute of encouragement and inspiration to live your best life. Want more? Join us on MalloryIrvin.com so we can connect with you on Instagram and YouTube. Start living your life now. You've only got one. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.